Hello and welcome to The Rounds Table, a weekly podcast about major new research in medicine. My name is Amol Verma. I'm a resident in internal medicine at the University of Toronto, and I'm joined today by Nathan Zilbert, who is a resident in general surgery, also at the University of Toronto. Hey, Nathan, how's it going?
Very well, Amol. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I apologize if I'm a little bit less than eloquent today. I just finished my Royal College exam this week, and I may be operating on fewer than normal number of brain cells.
Excuses, but congratulations on that major accomplishment.
Thank you. Let's reserve congratulations until we have some results of the examinations, but for now I will take the brief reprieve from studying. And I'm delighted to be doing our podcast again.
Absolutely.
So today Nathan and I are going to be talking about two articles. I've chosen not to do a clinical pearl this week because I'm all pearled out, but we'll come back to them next time. So we're going to get right into it, and then, of course, as always, we will conclude with our good stuff segment, bringing you short and sweet recommendations from the world of medicine. So first, we're going to talk about an intervention to reduce the rate of cesarean section deliveries in Quebec, Canada. And then second, we're going to talk about the treatment of alcoholic hepatitis and specifically a randomized control trial of prednisolone versus pentoxifilene. So Nathan, why don't you kick us off and tell me a little bit about this intervention to reduce C-section rates in Quebec?
Thanks very much, Amol. So I'm going to be talking about this paper that came out in April of this year in the New England Journal of Medicine by a group of obstetricians from our neighbors in Quebec, as you mentioned, that did a study looking at how a quality improvement initiative implemented at hospitals and compared to a control group showed a modest reduction in C-sections in the province. So I think it's somewhat obvious what some of the issues with an increased C-section rate include. Basically, you're trading a normal vaginal delivery for a major abdominal procedure. And the consequences of this include longer length of stay in hospital, a longer recovery, increased costs, potential wound issues like infection and hernias, scarring, and other issues that make it a less desirable intervention in someone who doesn't need it. And there's been a trend of increasing C-section rates in Canada over the past, or at least the first half decade of the 2000s. Increasing from 20% to 28%, which was some of the background that these authors were interested in.
That's a pretty dramatic rise, Nathan. Any thoughts on why this happens? Do people think it's sort of inappropriate use of C-sections? And I guess that's the underlying assumption.
Well, I think that's the underlying assumption. You know, they don't address it specifically, but if I go back to some of the comments made during my obstetrics rotation, which occurred in a different environment, actually, in New York City, and some of my dinner time conversation with my obstetrician father. I think, to just be brief about it, I don't want to get into this too detail. I mean, I think just the reality is that these women are being monitored very closely, and there's a hesitancy to let time elapse if there's anything that shows up on their monitoring that would be resulting in any concern for the baby. And so I think the threshold becomes quite low to proceed with the C-section when in many cases, or at least some cases, if labor were to have been let to continue, the baby would be okay.
Interesting. Okay. So complex, and I'm pleased to hear Dr. Zilbert's, the senior's take on this. And maybe, I don't know if did you speak with him about this paper at all?
He was overall not too impressed.
Okay,
we can get into that when we talk about the effect of the intervention.
Yeah, let's get into it. Okay, so tell me what was the study here?
So they randomized 32 hospitals in Quebec to either an intervention, quality improvement initiative, specifically looking at appropriate C-section use compared to normal standard of care. Prior to the randomization period, they began collecting data on rates of both maternal and neonatal outcomes, and specifically measuring the type of delivery done. And that was continued. The intervention period was a year and a half, and it was preceded and followed by a 1-year period of data collection, which resulted in a pre and post comparison analysis. And basically, this was done over 32 hospitals in Quebec, half receiving the intervention. Over just over 100,000 deliveries were involved. And the intervention results were that those hospitals where the intervention was conducted had a 1.8, bold, underline, exclamation point, 1.8 absolute risk reduction in the rates of C-sections as a consequence of their intervention. So what do you think, Amol?
1.8% out of like 23% baseline, right?
Yeah, so the baseline rates were approximately 23% in each group.
So I have to say, I'm not sure what to make of the 1.8. So it seems like an awful lot of effort. I'm very impressed at the scale of the intervention. You know, 1.8% is not necessarily something to be quibbled with. We're happy with a 1.8% absolute reduction in the rates of myocardial infarction, for example. Like, you know, that could be a very clinically significant rate if we're talking about like an intervention that's so common, like the C-section.
Yeah, so first of all, let's talk about what the intervention was. But I mean, I do think that we're talking about over 100,000 women. And so, you know, a 1-2% reduction, you know, we're talking about maybe, 1,000 people that didn't need to have a major operation. So I don't know that it's entirely trivial, but I mean, it's obviously not a dramatic change. So, I mean, I think it's definitely a fair point. So let's talk about the intervention a little bit. So basically what they did was they had a local opinion leader within each institution give the whole, sounds like, labor and delivery team, the obstetricians, the family physicians, the nurses, an in-service where they reviewed the latest Canadian guidelines on appropriate management of labor and delivery, specifically focusing on C-section use. And then they had a committee struck with two or three or four people at each institution, again, including obstetricians, nurses, and GPs, that served as an auditing committee. And they basically reviewed all the C-sections in the first month of every quarter and determined the local rates of C-sections and reviewed the specific cases and provided feedback. Both they describe somewhat vaguely informal and formal feedback to the members of the healthcare team to try and, provide teaching around each of the cases that were done in that first month. And so in the one-year intervention period, this would have occurred four times for each of the quarters of the year. And then in the post-intervention year, those randomized to the intervention were encouraged to maintain this practice, but they received no ongoing external support from the investigators, which they did receive during the intervention period.
Okay. So it seems like a pretty straightforward education-based and then some audit and feedback intervention. A couple of, I guess, initial thoughts come to my mind. First is, what are the hospitals that these people are working in? What were the sort of characteristics of these hospitals? Was most of the obstetrical medicine being provided by obstetricians or family physicians? And did this affect the outcome?
So the hospitals, in order to meet criteria, all had a rate of 300 deliveries a year and a C-section rate of at least 17% with no specific quality improvement programs ongoing for C-section reduction. So those were their inclusion criteria. And they had over 32 hospitals ultimately sort of deemed eligible for this. But when they attempted to randomize and they wanted to stratify based on hospital size and community versus academic, they resulted in 32 total, 16 in each group. So regarding your second question, in both groups, the rates of deliveries performed by family physicians was about 40%. I did want to point out that they did some auditing of adherence to this auditing and feedback protocol. 25% or four of the hospitals randomized to the intervention were not found to be compliant with the intervention itself. So when they reanalyzed with just looking at those hospitals that were compliant, the effect was larger, as you might expect, increasing to 3.4% absolute risk reduction. And another point that I think was interesting was that when they separated their analysis between high-risk and low-risk pregnancies, which they didn't specifically define their criteria for those terms, the effect was actually not seen in high-risk pregnancies at all. which I think is somewhat interesting and maybe, you know, is suggesting that maybe there's more appropriate C-section use or a different threshold for C-section use in pregnancies deemed to be high risk, and the area for improvement seemed to be in those of low risk.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, you know, the obvious, I guess, thought process is that there's inappropriate use of C-sections in low-risk deliveries, and, you know, that is something that could be avoided, and perhaps in high-risk deliveries, the rate of C-section is wholly appropriate. One of the questions I was wondering is, you know, they have, you know, 30 to 40 hospitals at their baseline measurements. Do they comment on the variation between hospitals in terms of C-section rates? Because that might point to an opportunity for intervention if there was dramatic area variation in the rates of C-sections. I couldn't really see much about that in their paper.
No, neither could I. And, you know, in trying to piece together, you know, bits of that, so their inclusion criteria were that hospital had to have at least a 17% rate of cesarean section. I'm not sure where they got that number from. And then, again, the baseline rates, they don't break it down hospital by hospital.
So I guess one of the concerns might be that if you're reducing the rate of inappropriate C-sections, are you also perhaps reducing the rate of appropriate C-sections? And so did they look at maternal outcomes and, you know, were they improved or harmed? And what about neonatal outcomes?
So they looked at both maternal major and minor morbidity and similarly neonatal major and minor morbidity, and they found no changes in maternal morbidity at all. And actually small improvements in major neonatal morbidity, but quite small, and no change in minor neonatal morbidity. So it didn't seem that reducing these C-section rates, you know, modestly, for sure, caused any changes, significant changes in complication rates for mother or baby. Now, you know, a couple of things that I think we've noticed here was that in the introduction of the manuscript, they talked about the national rates of C-section increasing from 20 to 28%, like we mentioned. But the baseline rates here in Quebec, in both groups, were around, you know, 22.5 to 23.5%. And I do think that in the United States, the baseline C-section rates are, you know, over 30%, I think due to the medical legal climate there with an even lower threshold to proceed to a C-section. So I wonder if there may be other jurisdictions in Canada and maybe other jurisdictions in the world where the rates of inappropriate C-sections are higher and where an intervention like this may result in an even larger effect.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and there was no real data about cost-effectiveness of this intervention here in this study. We can assume that reducing the rates of C-section is going to dramatically reduce costs, but, you know, whether the offset of those costs is enough to cover the cost of the program itself, we don't know any information about that, right?
Right.
Okay, so Nathan, why don't you give us a one-line summary of the paper?
So the one-liner is that this quality improvement initiative that included both in-services and audit feedback practices did result in a modest, call it 2% reduction in the rates of C-sections in hospitals in Quebec.
Okay, thank you so much. So I wanted to talk about alcoholic hepatitis, a study called the STOP-AH trial. It's either STOP-AH or STOPA. So I think I'm going to go with STOP-AH.
You are the man when it comes to trial acronyms as far as I'm concerned. So however you want to say it, that's how I'm going to say it.
All right. Well, I appreciate that vote of confidence. So this was a double-blinded randomized control trial that studied patients with alcoholic hepatitis and found that the two recommended treatments, pentoxifilin and prednisolone, didn't have particularly impressive effects. Pentoxifilin did not improve outcomes for the patients at all, and prednisolone may have improved short-term but did not improve long-term outcomes.
Okay, so maybe before we get into the details, you can walk me through a little bit about the specific patient population that this was looking at. Were these people with acute or chronic alcoholic liver disease? What was the outpatient, inpatient? What was the kind of group of patients that we're talking about here?
So this study was specifically examining patients who presented to hospital acutely and were diagnosed clinically with alcoholic hepatitis. So acute hepatitis from alcohol intoxication. As you might imagine, many of these patients, if not all of these patients, had chronic alcoholic liver disease. But this was specifically about their acute presentation for alcoholic hepatitis, which meant that the clinician